Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
Welcome. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree / CJSF Radio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca.
We're both tripping over our words here.
This little section is an impossible one for me to get through. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF-2573.
You sped that up.
Yeah.
You sped that up.
Showing off a little.
Anyways, hi everyone, or hi you, the listener. Here we are, another Tuesday for Slumber Party. So every 6-7 on Tuesdays. So glad you could join us this week. Very, very hot day today, I think, personally.
And we have a hot topic coming up later, too.
Very hot topic. Very exciting topic that we're looking forward to sharing, sharing some thoughts on this. But as usual, we'll start off with some music before we do that.
And also, we didn't introduce ourselves today, but I'm DJ Star.
Do we not even? I'm getting too used to this. I'm DJ Coco.
You know us already. It's fine.
Yeah, you should know us by now. Is there anything else?
No, sorry. I just wanted to say that. The first song that we are going to play is called Late Summer, and it's by the artists Ciel and Matisse Ruffing. She's a Toronto-based Chinese DJ who blends house and techno from her EP Hot Squid.
So, hope you enjoy.
Enjoy. Thank you.
6, CGSS Video Series captures high-quality video recordings of live performances.
So, who are you?
That's a dumb question. We're necking. We're a band.
Interviews with impactful and inspiring artists.
We weren't very good at keeping it a secret.
As well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You're tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And that last song that you just heard was Hey Now by Koreatown Acid. She is, oh my gosh, my chair is so squeaky. She is a South Korean-Canadian electronic DJ based in Toronto. And if you missed it, that last song right before that was Late Summer by Ciel and Matisse Ruffing. So yeah, I think we're ready to launch into our big topic for the day.
Mega topic. So this one is both of us inspired I guess. Mm-hmm. But kind of goes off of the, I don't know, it's like social trend of going to Japan.
And being obsessed with Japanese culture, which fuels the travels to Japan.
Yeah. So that's the basis of the conversation. But specifically, we are going to go more into the stereotypes and more the history of how Japanese women and Asian women are perceived overall by men.
Especially white men.
Especially white men. So kind of this whole sphere of, you know, there's a lot of white guys specifically who are very, very, very interested in Japanese culture. As
I love the tone of voice.
Very, to a point that I don't think is seen on any level of any other culture. Not any other Asian culture, not, you know, maybe Latino culture, for example.
At least currently and at least right now, it feels like a very current trend of being obsessed with Japan specifically. And yeah, I agree with DJ Coco that there does not seem to be any other parallels. I know in the past there have been, you know, the romanticization of different European countries, but this is a little bit different and also has some history backing why people might be more obsessed with Asian women, Japanese women, are also just foreign in general cultures, or quote-unquote foreign.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We're just going to start off slow. So just the fact that everyone is traveling, and traveling is more accessible in today's age than ever. Plane tickets can be bundled with hotel deals, for example. It's gone down in price, so more of the average person can go travel. And specifically Japan, maybe you've heard of a friend or a family member, someone who's going to Japan at this point, because number one, that it's so cheap, or it's a lot cheaper to get a plane ticket over there and just quickly direct go over there, Canadian dollar strong.
Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to say that there's no reason to go to Japan either, other than an obsession, because there is great food, you know, the nature is really nice. But for the trend to be growing so largely, there has to be some other factors at play. And we want to, you know, dissect that a little bit more.
Yes, because there's also a lot of people in the West, specifically also Western guys, white guys, who are very entrenched into Japanese culture. So we're talking, you know, anime, biggest one, because nowadays anime and liking anime is quote, it's considered cool, versus, you know, 10-15 years ago when you'd be seen in a negative light. And other things like, you know, Pokemon's massive now, the Japanese food like ramen, and even just fantasizing about how respectful and polite their culture is. Of people waiting their turn at subways, for example.
Yeah, and there's also this, I guess, idea that Japan is, you know, living in the future. They're so futuristic. They're so propelled into further development than us. And I feel like that is also a point of intrigue for many people. But I think a question also could be, like, what is the difference between appreciation for a culture, because there are obviously like lots of great things about Japanese culture, but also the line between appreciation or fetishization, because there's so much about other cultures in general that's more accessible. We can consume a lot of Japanese media on the internet, streaming, we can learn the language on Duolingo, lots of universities are offering these courses too. And yeah, like the fetishization aspect, like the definition of that. And specifically when we're talking about, I guess, Asian women, is that it's a form of objectification that operates through like reducing an aspect of someone's identity to just that, and not seeing them as an individual and only seeing their value in a sexual light or in a light that, I guess, brings some other form of value. So it's kind of different between fetishization of maybe like Asian women and also fetishization of a culture, but it's often rooted in some like power dynamics and based on stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely you know, yeah, people who appreciate the culture. And then there's this link that we are trying to dig at. There's some sort of connection between a lot of these people who like the culture and also associate the liking the culture with liking the type of woman mm-hmm. in the culture. And we can see this, for example, with just in the past few decades and more commonly in the 21st century of this emerging, sex tourism market, specifically in Asia. So a lot of men who travel to other countries for the sole purpose of intercourse, sex, and this is massive in places like Thailand, the Philippines, Cambodia, Vietnam, and one of them also being Japan with a massive sex industry, and not even just for sex, but for things like massage parlors, for example, or hostess clubs that are borderline sexualizing the woman to these travelers.
Yeah, and a lot of it is to, sell and make money too. So when there is that aspect of sex tourism, it is in a way fueling the economy of these countries, but at what cost?
Mm.
And I guess it depends on where you stand with sex work and everything, but I think, it can be exploitative. And there has been at least a lot of historical instances of sex work being exploitative in terms of, we can get into it more actually later because we're going to get into historical power dynamics.
Yeah.
But in these certain situations where, there's the military men involved.
Mm-hmm. So more of these, we're just trying to give a broad overview of specifically the trend for, white men and Asian women. This relationship is the, for if we're looking at statistics, is in the U.S., just to preface, because they don't have as many Asian people compared to, Latino women, other races. And the having the, the marriage between a white man and an Asian female is the second most common U.S. interracial marriage, the highest being white man and Hispanic female, which is just also based off geography, and that they have more Hispanic women there. But within this statistic, the highest number was for this relationship was for Japanese women. So 63% of them were marrying white men in this. And there were other ones too that were pretty high. The higher other ones were, Korean women and the white guys. There was also Filipino women and white guys, but just going off the top, Japanese women were the highest. And this is also surprising because if you look the other way, which is, the having relationship between an Asian guy and a white woman, it is three times less likely to occur. So as of 2020 by Pew Research Center, they compared these two couples that being a white guy and an Asian female, there was almost there was around 900,000 couples versus Asian guy and white female, which was a little bit less than 300,000 couples. So
yeah.
That is saying something that's interesting because, in places where we are more diverse and we have equal exposure of either gender to each other, like, why wouldn't this just be equal? Like, why don't we just see, 500,000 couples of white guy, Asian female, 500,000 guys, 500 couples of Asian guys and white females. So something else is going on here, which we want to get into.
Yeah, it's definitely a representation of how cultural narratives are constructed around desire and attraction for different races and also based on gender. So yeah, there's some, there's some reasons that we have that may fuel into this.
Yeah. This is a hypothesis. So take this with a grain of salt, but there is some patterns of, white male preferences for, Asian or Japanese women. And one of them being if we have to go back and look into history and with power dynamics. And specifically with Japanese women, they were one of the most visible groups to be heavily sexualized and exotized in history. So first of all, if we look into 1700s to 1800s in European colonial literature, at the very beginning, they were already portraying Asian women as seen as, you know, exotic and submissive and available to Western men. And it's also something to mention that usually white men were migrators, and they would migrate to other places and take over, and they were
colonizers.
Yeah, colonizers. That's the word.
Migrators.
I'm trying to be. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word.
No, so they being colonized. So kind to them.
So white men colonized to other places, and women were in these places. So that could be something that contributes. Another part I wanted to mention with specifically Japan and Japanese women is with this idea of exoticness of the women and their culture was that Japan started beginning to trade with the West around the mid 1800s, and they were trading things like, you know, kimonos, tea, and the Western travelers specifically first noticed, you know, I think geisha, which is it's a woman who is a performing arts entertainer, and she wears a kimono kind of things. And so they were exposed to all these, you know, more exotic to their eyes ideas, and this could have also played a role.
Yeah, and that definitely ties into this concept of Orientalism, which is these typically Western interpretations of Eastern culture. So already Orientalism, even the word, is kind of like othering a lot of Eastern cultures and placing Western perspectives in the center. So it portrays, you know, like people from the East or Asian women and men as foreign, exotic, like a static, kind of unchanging culture. And it does presume some level of Western superiority. And my thinking process is kind of like, well, maybe if you believe that, you know, whiteness is associated with superiority, that can be supported by surrounding yourself with people who you think are inferior in some ways. And already with the patriarchy, a lot of men do think that women are inferior, although necessary in a complementary role. And then taking that even further is like with Asian women, we can get into it more, but there are a lot of stereotypes surrounding how obedient and submissive that they are. So that could kind of just reinforce, you know, this Western ego or this idea that, you know, the West is superior and being white is superior as well.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a moment as well with that, since there are a lot of stereotypes. Obviously, stereotypes are not representative of a whole population, but they are there from reasons that we can't control individually. But moving on with the last portion of the history as well is that I think a lot of these ideas of these stereotypes also as well, and the first exposure to Asian women and specifically Japanese women in general for the Western world was after World War II, and also during the end, or I guess in World War II era, and with the military stationment of U.S. troops in Japan. So just looking at the entire piece of war, you know, Japan was seen as these, you know, very dangerous, aggressive country. You know, they were taking over places. And so the Japanese men were specifically, you know, stereotyped in the media as to be dangerous. They're aggressive and they're uncivilized. But meanwhile, on the other hand, the Japanese women were seen as potentially more that they were innocent victims and they had to be saved by the West, and that they were desirable and that they were exotic as well. And they just fit this image of traditional femininity, which were particularly, I think, don't know, adored. I don't want to say adored. Mm-hmm. But made the American troops who were stationed to Japan very interested in this kind of idea of this, I don't want to say fantasy, but like an Asian feminine fantasy is the word I put down. And this whole era also led to, you know, a lot of building relationships in Japan after World War II. And this didn't just also occur in Japan, but this is also including with American specifically, with the Vietnam War, for example, or Korean War, where they had these U.S. troops stationed in other Asian countries. So this led to more widespread, you know, sexualization and relationships with Asian women budding at this time.
Yeah, definitely. And just something to add is that I feel like during wartime, but I also in general, but I think it's especially prominent during wartime, is that there's this idea of like conquering another nation, and that often is included with like conquering women's bodies, I think, a lot of the time. Like, at least in the Vietnam War, there's so many stories of, also, I'm going to start talking about some things that may be triggering, like sexual assault, so just so you know. During the Vietnam War, there's so many stories of rape and murder from these American soldiers who are fed this very violent narrative that they need to fulfill, and very little consequences for any war crimes that they do or any people that they kill or rape, basically. And there was a comfort woman system for American soldiers in Japan when DJ Coco mentioned that there's a lot of like military stationed there. And there's a lot of reports of women who are coerced into this prostitution. And all of this combined kind of just creates and perpetuates this idea that Asian women are obedient and submissive because of, I guess, a lot of the war experience.